This is the Everything Financial Radio podcast. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. Glad you decided to listen in, and thanks to the nice things you're saying about us to your friends and family, the Everything Financial Radio podcast is growing every week. If you're a new listener, this is where we talk about what's going on in the economy. We talk about Federal Reserve policy and political policies and what it might mean for you and your money moving ahead. And most importantly, we provide you with educational resources to consider that could be of some help to you as well. If you've not yet received our free Investors Discovery Kit, I don't know what you're waiting for. It is free. All you have to do to get your complimentary copy is visit the website investingapproach.com. The website, again, is investingapproach.com. Just enter your name and address and let us know where to mail your Investors Discovery Kit, and we'll be glad to do that. I'm very pleased to have back on the Everything Financial Radio program returning guest Mr. Ian Gordon. Mr. Gordon is a globally known economic forecaster, author, and speaker. He's also founder and chairman of the Long Wave Group. You can check out his work at thelongwavegroup.com, and I would encourage you to do so. And Ian, it's been a while, but always a pleasure to have you on the program. Welcome back.
Well, thank you very much for having me back.
Ian, let's just jump in a little bit, because you had talked last time you were on the program that you believe the outlook globally will lead to deflation. It's been 9 or 10 months since we've talked. Europe has engaged in their version of quantitative easing. The Fed has tapered. There's talk of deflation in some countries. The Chinese central bank's now warning of deflation. Singapore is experiencing deflation. We're starting to see that. So is this the beginning of what you had forecast?
Well, it is and it isn't. Actually, in some ways, my view has sort of been altered somewhat by what I see as the threat of sort of currency collapse. Because if your currency collapses, and a good example, let's say, is in the Ukraine, then you don't have deflation, you have a massive inflation, because the value of a currency falls to so dramatically that everything that you have to purchase in that currency gets increasingly expensive. So what we're seeing right now, as I see it, is the threat of failure of paper currencies, and I believe that's on a worldwide scale. So that if the paper, for instance, let's just take Greece as an example. It certainly appears that Greece is very close to exiting the euro, either through its own choice or by the the European country's choice. And when that happens, Greece will have to return to the drachma as its currency. And that will mean that the value of the drachma will drop dramatically against the euro, and that means that everything that has to be paid for in drachmas is going to be very expensive, so that you're going to have a fairly high inflation in Greece. And this really applies to any country whose currency, paper currency, fails. And I think ultimately, and throughout history, we know that this has been the case, all paper currencies are going to fail. So that right now we're in the sort of the throes of a deflationary kind of era, but I think that we could have massive inflation as currencies fail.
And Ian, let me ask this, because you go back and look at Weimar Germany, there's other examples historically that when currencies fail, up to that point, there's massive inflations or hyperinflations, but then it seems that the debt that caused the deflation to start with just gets recalibrated to some other currency, and you see deflation following the inflation. Would you agree with that view?
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that I do, I'm not sure that I don't, because I've never really sort of worked it through, to the final outcome. Because really, what I see, Dennis, is what's occurring is that the whole world monetary system is basically starting to be restructured, and that restructure is sort of occurring under the Chinese leadership, with Russia playing, being a bit player in that regard as well. And you know, the Chinese have just set out the AIIB bank, which is a sort of a counterpart to the IMF, which, of course, the IMF is effectively a U.S.-led bank. And the AIIB will be not led by China, because China doesn't want to have a veto in that institution as the U.S. does in the IMF. But we're seeing this with the BRICS currencies, you know, that how they're all aligned with each other, how China is starting to make bilateral monetary deals with countries that she trades with, and so on. So that slowly what we're seeing is a new currency, a world monetary reset. And actually, and I've written about this, that effectively in all of these long wave winters, there's always been a monetary reset that has occurred in each of the long wave winters. And of course, in the previous long wave winter, the world monetary system was based on gold, and that collapsed between 1931 and 33. So what I see here, Dennis, is that the new monetary system that is evolving under the Chinese sort of guidance is probably going to be a return to some sort of a gold standard system. And, you know, we know that China and Russia have both been amassing huge amounts of gold. We don't know how much gold the Chinese have. They're not reporting on how much they have, but I've seen some people sort of refer to the Chinese gold holding as in excess of 20,000 tons. I mean, that's a huge amount. The America purports to have about 8,300 tons, and I suspect that that's not the case anymore. But if that's the case, then China could come out with Russia, and we suggesting that their currencies are now gold-backed, which would force a reset for everybody else, would have to come back to that standard as well. Simply because if you couldn't go back your currency would be deemed worthless, and no one would want to be paid in it.
So, Ian, we have 2.5 minutes or so left in this segment. Take somebody listening to this interview, and you talk about a currency reset. That's kind of a scary thing to consider and talk about. How would our average listener be affected when that happens?
Well, again, what I'm saying is that if the Chinese and the Russians decide that their currencies are going to be backed by gold, and I think they are moving in that direction just simply because of the amount of gold that they're acquiring. If the country that you live in doesn't have the gold to back their currency, they're going to have to get it, because effectively that currency is going to be deemed worthless for external trade purposes, because people won't want to, you know, take on the paper currency. They want the gold backing. And if that's the case, then we're going to see that sort of massive inflation occurring in any country that can't support its currency with gold. So that's, you know, one has to wonder, you know, whether the U.S. does have the 8,300 tons to support its currency. I really don't believe that she does. And if she doesn't, then she's going to have to get gold to back the dollar.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there in this segment. Our guest today is Mr. Ian Gordon. He is the founder and chairman of the Long Wave Group. Quick reminder, if you've not yet received our Investor's Discovery Kit, all you have to do to get your free copy containing the New Retirement Rules book, a copy of the New Economy magazine, as well as an educational CD and DVD, is visit the website investingapproach.com. Enter your name, give us an address where you'd like us to mail your discovery kit, and we will be glad to do so. Now, the topic I want to talk about in this segment is something called a money throttle. Now, a money throttle is not really an economic term that is often used. It's a term that I used in my first book, Economic Consequences, to talk about the Federal Reserve tool. And this tool is a tool that the central bank uses to try to jumpstart or slow the economy. Now, you have to think back a long ways before you come to a time that the economy was actually overheating and we had massive inflation. I will give you that example as this segment progresses. But basically, this tool or this money throttle is the tool that the Fed uses to control interest rates. Now, the Federal Reserve sets an interest rate known as the Fed funds rate. And the Fed funds rate is the interest rate at which depository institutions, that's banks essentially, lend balances to each other overnight. That's the Fed funds rate. Now, when the Fed funds rate is lower, the prime interest rate is lower, and of course, the interest that you and I might pay to go borrow money for whatever cause would also be lower. Well, a lower Fed funds rate essentially just means lower borrowing costs. And lower borrowing costs means that money moves more quickly. People borrow money more readily. Now, why is that important? Well, it's important because our banking system is something known as a fractional reserve banking system. If you go to the Federal Reserve Bank's website, the New York Federal Reserve Bank's website to be specific, if you go deposit $1,000 into your bank, your banker has to reserve 10% of that, or $100. Now, if the reserve requirement were to be increased to 20%, then on a $1,000 deposit, the bank would have to reserve or hold back $200. Now, the more the bank has to reserve, the less money the bank has to loan out. And of course, conversely, the less money the bank has to reserve, the more money the banker has to loan out. Well, the faster money moves for the system, the more money that is created. I'll just give you an example. Let's say I go to my bank and I put $10,000 in my bank account. My banker has to reserve $1,000 and can loan out the other $9,000. Now, if that banker is loaning out that $9,000 at relatively high interest rates, there's not going to be as many takers. There's not going to be as many people interested in borrowing that $9,000. However, if interest rates are lower, they're going to be a lot more takers. There's going to be a lot more people interested in borrowing money for whatever cause. So if the Fed wants to create more money, they want to expand the money supply, which is the definition of inflation. Expanding the money supply, and the goal of the Fed is 2% inflation. Let's expand it just enough to devalue the dollar just a little bit, and it will create economic growth. At least that's the theory. Well, if the banker loans out that $9,000 and someone borrows it, say, to maybe buy a used car, they get the $9,000 loan. They take the $9,000 to the car dealer. The car dealer takes the $9,000 and deposits it in their bank account. That banker has to reserve $900 and can loan out the other $8,100. So as time goes on and money moves, if money's moving at full speed, if the economists would call this really the velocity of money. The higher the velocity of money, the more money that's created. So a $1,000 deposit into your bank can actually expand into $10,000, according to the New York Federal Reserve Bank website, if money is moving fast enough. Now, if you go back and take a look at how this money throttle now actually works in practice, or in today's economy, I would argue, and we'll talk about in the last segment of today's program, maybe doesn't work in practice, you'll see that there has been times in history that the economy has been too hot, there's been too much inflation, and the economy needed to slow down. In this case, the Fed raised interest rates, or pulled back, if you will, on the money throttle. Now, this period of time, some of you may be old enough to remember. Unfortunately, I am old enough to remember. In 1981, inflation peaked at 13.5%. By 1983, the inflation rate dropped to 3.2% officially. Now, the way the inflation rate is measured has changed over time, and that tends to muddy up the water or skew the numbers a little bit, but let's just take those numbers and work with those. The Federal Reserve Chairman at the time was a guy by the name of Paul Volcker, and Mr. Volcker has had the Fed funds rate go as high as 20%. The Fed funds rate, which is today 0.25%, just for comparison purposes, the Fed funds rate went from 11.2% in 1979 to 20% in June of 1981. Well, when interest rates are that high, there's not nearly as many takers. There's not as many people interested in borrowing money. So it slows down the velocity of money and it slows down the creation of money. And when the money supply contracts, that is deflationary. So at times you want to slow that down. Well, this is from my book, Economic Consequences. And I talk about the fact that when Alan Greenspan was chair of the Federal Reserve, right after the tech stock bubble collapsed, Mr. Greenspan wanted to jumpstart the economy. So he reduced interest rates. He reduced interest rates from 5.75% in January of 2001 to 0.75% in November of 2002. Well, my point is this, and I'll talk about it more in the fourth segment of today's program. When money is created, it has to go somewhere. Newly created money has to find a home. And it will find a home. And typically when money is created, asset price bubbles form. So when you go back and look at what happened, and we'll talk about it more again in the fourth segment of today's program, as I said, we saw the Fed funds rate drop from 6.5% in May of 2000 to 0.75% in 2002. By the time the Federal Reserve increased the Fed funds rate back to 3% in August of 2004, all that newly created money had found a home. Real estate prices, residential prices, had increased about 50% on average in only a three-year time frame. Here's the point. When bubbles are created, bubbles burst because debt accumulation has a limit. The topics of debt accumulation, inflation, and deflation are covered in detail in our Investor's Discovery Kit. If you'd like to get a free copy, as I mentioned at the beginning of this segment, just visit the website investingapproach.com and we'll be glad to send one out to you. That's our first podcast for the week. Tune in again in just a couple days. Bye.